This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 112, where CJ and I are going to talk about the latest cloud news, recorded live January the 20th, 2016.
Welcome to the Microsoft Cloud Show, the only place to stay up to date on everything going on in the Microsoft Cloud world, including Windows Azure, Office 365, SharePoint, Exchange, Link, and related technologies. Just the information, no marketing, no BS. I'm Andrew Connell.
And I'm Chris Johnson.
And we're just two dudes telling you how we see it.
Good morning, CJ. How are you?
Pretty good. How about you?
I'm doing okay. I'm slowly thawing out.
You Floridians are cute. With your warm weather and never freezing. Listen to you.
Hey, man, this is no. This is freezing for anybody. So, like, not in Florida, but last weekend, did a long weekend up to Chicago with the family. And it was... when we were there, it was around 1 degree Fahrenheit, which I believe is something like -9 degrees Celsius. And the feels like, or the wind chill up there was -16 at the peak, at the high, which is what, like -27 or -28 Celsius.
Yeah, that is pretty chilly.
It was ridiculous how I can't fathom how people can live in that kind of an environment. I get that you have heat and all that kind of stuff, but being so limited to how much time you can spend outside, I get there's places, you know, in Northern Europe, like Finland and Norway and Sweden, and I get the Canada, and I get all that. But I just can't believe that it's that so many people live in that area.
Yeah, they just got to drink heavily to keep their blood thin. And it's like antifreeze, right?
I was talking to my cousin who's he owns an outdoor store, like a backpacking and outdoor sports and all that kind of stuff. And he was telling me, he's like, look, when you're in an environment like that, he said, you eat like just tons of protein because you don't diet in that time of year because you just have, your body is just working so hard, just burning calories just to stay warm. So
yeah,
I looked at my wife and I'm like, I just ran a half marathon and I got no problem going through and eating like crazy. And she's like, I've got no problem not being on a diet. But I can tell you one thing, I strongly do not recommend anyone go run a half marathon and then immediately within 3 hours, get on a plane and specifically go into an environment like that, because it took the whole time I was there, I felt like my quads were not recovering at all. It felt like someone like every morning was just taking hammers and hitting me on the quads. My legs were so painful until I got home. Yesterday was the first day I started feeling better, which is what the race was on Saturday. And yesterday was Tuesday. I flew home on Monday. So what is that? Saturday, Sunday, Monday, 4 days later, I finally started to feel like I was recovering. And I've done half marathons before, and ouch. You feel the next day you're starting to recover. So,
ouch. Yeah, I just went skiing on the weekend twice, and I feel like I was beaten up. So my quads are recovering. I ripped them a good bit on a few high-speed ski runs. It was nice.
So, hey, today we were going to do a few we're going to do a little bit of cloud news update. But I guess there's a little bits of news that are kind of like tech news that have happened in the last little bit that I guess we can kind of muse on. One of them was Microsoft, the tickets for their Build conference went on sale yesterday, January the 19th, the time we're recording this. And so you jumped on, you went and got a ticket?
I did. But there was a bit of drama, actually, because it's, as far as geek conferences go, it was drama anyway. But it was, I was sitting at my desk at like 8:45. PST, right? So Pacific time. Tickets go on sale at 9. Started refreshing the page. Then I thought, maybe I'll have a little bit of a poke around the site and just sort of guessed a few URLs. And I was like, I wonder what the registration URL is. So I was like, buildwindows.com/reg/, a few different combos. And then I tried WAC register, or registration, I think it was. I ended up trying. And it was boom. And it was like, hey, register now. And I was like, okay. So I went through the registration, and I think I found that link at about 8:58. So I went through, let me log in, started to register, and then I was done by 9:00, and it said, boom, congratulations, you're on the wait list.
So I was like, what? You registered before registration opened up, and you're on the wait list.
Before Reg opened, yep. And I was like, I'm smelling a rat. And so what I suspect happened is they put everybody on the wait list to begin with and then started picking names off, in sort of 200 or 300, 500-person chunks from the top. because about 40 minutes later, I got an email saying, hey, congratulations, you've been taken off the wait list. Click this link in the next 2 days to finish your registration and pay and all that sort of stuff. And so I went through that. And I suspect they were worried about some massive flood and ended up and worrying about people paying for tickets before they'd gotten it, you know, without being guaranteed a seat and stuff like that. So they, it looks like they put everybody on the wait list and then started taking people off the top. Mm. But man, oh man, it caused a bit of a whole angry mob on Twitter, that's for sure.
Yeah, I was watching it explode and watching a Facebook thread, a group conversation, watching that explode while I was in the middle of recording a podcast with Jeremy Thake yesterday.
Oh yeah.
And yeah, we're both just kind of watching this like, are you seeing this? Like, yeah, we were both on the same thread and it's like, this is going crazy.
Yeah, it worked out in the end, but man, it really pissed a bunch of people off.
Yeah, it's interesting to me because I guess, you know, last year, Build, when the tickets went on sale, we had this interesting thing where people were like, you know, which one should I go to, especially if I'm a developer, because you had Build and then the week immediately following that was the Ignite conference. This year, we don't have that. This year, Ignite is, I think, in September and Build is in April or May. And so that was one people were asking that question. But last year, the tickets for Build sold out in 17 or 20 minutes, something like that.
Yeah.
And this year, the official word was they sold out in 1 minute. So you and I were talking a little bit on the pre-show, you know, I was a little perplexed on why they sold out so fast this year compared to last year. When I look back at last year, I felt like there was more kind of buildup and anticipation to things that were going to be talked about at Build. Specifically, HoloLens was the big one.
Yeah. Everybody thought they might be getting one.
Yeah, exactly.
For example.
Exactly. Yeah. So I thought that there was a lot of buildup to that going into Build last year. But this year, I don't really see so much of like, what are they going to talk about? What's specific there? I mean, I know that there's a lot of stuff around open sourcing and going with .NET on cross-platform that they announced last year. And we're seeing getting closer and closer to it. I've seen they've already changed some of the names where it's no longer ASP.NET 5. It's now ASP.NET Core version 1.
1.0.
Yeah. So I've seen stuff like that. But, I you know, how much more interesting is it? I mean, you had an interesting theory on why tickets sold out more. I mean, I was thinking, hey, maybe it's got something to do with the fact that Ignite and Build are not so close together.
Yeah, I think that definitely helped. That I think you're right about that, that without two or three conferences back-to-back, it really helps, right? And so last year we went from still at Microsoft then, we went from Build 1 week to Ignite the next week, and it was pretty painful from a just putting on the event point of view. But then attendees had to choose, you know, because you typically wouldn't go to both events, and so people had to pick which conference, and developers especially, obviously, would have to pick, do I go to Build or do I go to Ignite, and what's most appropriate. And I also think that companies are opening up a little bit more with their spending and potentially are now more open to sending people again after they've come out of financial hardship. So that could be part of it too. Mm. I think in terms of news, I think the event will focus around HoloLens, Windows 10, Xbox, and open source stuff. I think those would be the big four pillars, I suspect.
I think what's the big thing that you're interested in learning more about at Build this year?
I would say dev platform on Azure.
Yeah.
So what's going on around Docker and Azure and running stuff on Azure. I'm not so worried about the whole open sourcing, or not so interested in open sourcing of .NET and all that sort of stuff. Like, that's interesting, but it's not what I would go for, I think. I would be, I guess, two things for me, Azure platform improvements and enhancements and learning more about what they're doing with Docker and all of that there, and also app ecosystem. So what's going on with building apps across Windows, Xbox, web, stuff like that.
Yeah, I'd agree. I mean, that's the
that stuff really interests me.
The big thing that I'm interested in is the exact same two things you said, is specific dev platform, DevOps type stuff that we can do with Azure, and more kind of the embracing of Docker on Azure. I know that they've got this container service that they've announced in preview, so it'd be a good time to have it come out in RTM, or at least having a lot more information about it at Build. So it'd be interesting to see. I chose to stay home. I went to Build last year for the first time since it was like PDC back in 08 or 09. Cool experience. I'm flattered I got a chance to speak. But from an actual conference perspective, to me, it wasn't one that I felt I got a lot of value out of, because there's not as much opportunity, I think, to kind of run around and interact with vendors or interact with customers. It's more of a dev show. And to me, all the content's going to be online. So I'd rather, I guess I got another two guys here where I live, and we're going to not do like a remote watching party, but we're going to go either work out of one of our houses or work out of the local co-work space, have it on, and we're just going to watch some of the content and kind of discuss it while we're while we're watching it and save a couple $1,000s. Actually, one guy, he tried to go, but he works for a $1 billion company, and they tried to send their entire team, and they ended up, all of them got waitlisted, and they still haven't heard anything back yet. So he's like, well, they just made the decision easy for us.
Yeah, yeah. I think you and I are a bit weird like that. Like, we go to a lot of different conferences. We kind of get conferenced out, but there's a lot of people that, you know, that don't get to go to conferences very often or get to choose one per year. And so I can understand why people are excited about it. It's a pretty cool conference in terms of dev stuff if you don't get to go to a lot. So
yeah, it's interesting decision this year. They said that they're not doing hardware stuff, which I would not be surprised if that changed between now and then.
I suspect that will change significantly. I suspect the way that all worked in previous builds was the sponsor would pick up the tab for all of that.
Yeah.
And I suspect they're just waiting to finalize who's going to do it.
Mm.
If anybody, we'll see.
So they say, now we're not going to do it, but hey, look, we respond to your feedback.
Yeah. You might as well under promise and over deliver.
Oh yeah. Sounds like a classic consultant thing.
Exactly.
Anyway. Hey, I'll give you one other quick update this week. Last week I mentioned it on the show, but this week we also shipped another update of the Angular directives for the Office UI Fabric. We're up to version 0.2. We got 12 directives. We're like 40% coverage on the whole thing. But the cool bit of news that we had this week is that we got approved and added to the community-driven or community-managed CDN. It's called CDN.js. So we are now up on a CDN as well.
Awesome.
And I tell you what, the cool part of that is that we are also added to the automatic inclusion. So whenever we cut a release, as long as we do it the right way, which is just to tag it in Git,
it's pulled.
It automatically gets pulled. I can't tell you how nice that is, because trying to get into their CDN was incredibly painful. Their Git repo, the way you do it is you fork their repo, you add your stuff, you run it through a little test, and you submit your stuff in a single commit and then submit a PR. Sounds easy. It is easy. It just takes a long time, because if you clone their repo like you normally would, it's a 13 gig repo. It takes 45 seconds just to run Git status on it.
That's pretty cool.
So yesterday I learned how you can do what's called a sparse checkout. And there's a setting inside of Git that you can flip a little bit, and then you can tell it what directories you're interested in. It still downloads the entire Git database that's in the hidden.git folder. And for this repo, that was a gig, so it still took some time. But it would then only clone the folders that you're interested in. And then you could run Git status, and it only takes 25 to 30 seconds.
Right. Jeez.
Thank God that's over. We got merged this morning.
That's a bunch of data. Yeah. Nice work. Yeah. Oh, that'll really help people including it and getting speedy downloads from wherever they happen to be and not having to include it in their project.
Yeah, exactly. So it's cool, because we've also gotten, since these announcements have come out, I guess we were on I think episode 76 of the Adventures in Angular. And we're also on the most recent episode of the Office 365 developer podcast that went live on January the 21st, which is the magic of recording tomorrow. But really, when you hear this, people, last week.
Yeah, gotcha.
Anyway, how about some news?
Yeah, should we dive in?
Sure. You want to go first?
Sure. So the big one, it's kind of like the nuclear bomb of cloud news. Microsoft are donating $1 billion of cloud services over the next 3 years. $1 billion.
With a B?
Yeah. Imagine that. Like getting, you know, $330 million Azure credit on your that's a whole lot of VMs, man.
Excuse me, I'm gonna go spin up some Godzilla VMs with some premium storage.
Oh yeah, I'm gonna do some Bitcoin mining.
Screw that, man. I just want to run Git status on a 13 gig line.
That's one big Docker cluster. So yeah, Microsoft are donating cloud services of about $1 billion in value to not-for-profit or non-profit groups over the next 3 years. And there's a good blog post by Chief Legal Officer Brad Smith from Microsoft, exec at Microsoft, about what they're trying to do here. But in a nutshell, they basically want to help, I think they're talking about like 70,000 nonprofits, or aim to serve 70,000 nonprofit organizations over a 3 year period. And by doing, you know, by giving away basically Azure cloud services to help, you know, the likes of universities do, you know, big crunching of numbers and research and things like that, which, what a huge move, right? I mean, this, if you're a, if you're a researcher at an organization wanting to do some modeling or some big number crunching or what have you, being able to have, you know, world-class resources at your disposal like this without having to scrap and fight for budget to get it done would be pretty impressive, or pretty useful, I would think. So that's a nice move. I think Microsoft recently talked about its a new organization called Microsoft Philanthropies, which is I think they talked about it last month, which is kind of the umbrella that they're going to do this through. And so we've linked off to this in Flipboard, but where Brad Smith gets into that in more detail and kind of the goals and what it's trying to achieve. But this is all spurred by Satya, the CEO, obviously, and wanting to make sure Microsoft's doing their bit to sort of help push the world forward and help. So Microsoft's always been, it's one of the most, I guess, when I worked there, one of the things I was most proud of from a company perspective was how generous the company is and the people that work there. And Microsoft's always been one of the most giving organizations, or at least its employees have been as well. And Microsoft used to match donations and things, but they give, yeah, tens and tens of millions of dollars a year to various charities. Yeah, they've always been a very giving organization, which has been, it was pretty cool to be part of. So this is just the sort of the next few steps along that. And it's really amazing to see. It'll be interesting to see what people do with it.
Yeah, it's really cool to see that. I mean, what would be interesting to see, because it also comes out of education, is kind of like, there's a philanthropic side of this but it's also going to be interesting to see how this plays as well with people who are in the education space that are taking advantage of it and moving on beyond education, like they did with their contributions or their credits or their gifts to the Y Combinator group as well, where you get a bunch of credits, you come out of that and see what you use with it. So that'll be interesting to see.
And let's be fair, right? This is seeding, right, as well.
Oh yeah,
this is good marketing too, right? It's if you seed the market with a bunch of free stuff, I'm sure they will be expecting returns in the long run by people using it more and being aware of what it's capable of and all that stuff. So it's good for the public.
First hit's free.
Exactly, but also good for Microsoft too.
Yeah, exactly.
But pretty cool to see.
Another cool thing, though, around the space is that in response to Amazon, who dropped the price of their compute and memory-optimized EC2 VMs a couple weeks ago, Microsoft also dropped a couple days ago, on, I guess, January the 14th, they cut the prices of some of their virtual machines from anywhere from 10 to 17%. An article here on TechCrunch, which we have on our Flipboard, is that a lot of the cuts are going to focus on the D-series instances. Prices for these guys start at just over $100 per month. They top out around $1,800. You're going to see things on the V2 machines from the D1s all the way through up the D5s. For the Windows Server instances, you'll see those cuts start at 10%. For Linux-based ones, you'll see them go up to somewhere around 14%. Mm. And then for the bigger VMs that are anywhere from the D11 to the D14 instances, for Windows-based, you'll see a 13% cost reduction or price reduction. You also see on the Linux side for the D11 to D14s up to 17%. So that can be a pretty significant cost savings for organizations that are using these guys.
Yeah, you know, it was funny. A few episodes ago, I said, oh, you know, I think we'll see the cloud war, the storage wars, and the price wars slow down. And then suddenly there was this big spate of news that said everybody's reducing prices. So, yeah, maybe I was smoking crack.
It felt like the day after we started to get hit with it. But
they must be listening to the pod show.
Yeah, exactly. Have you gotten feedback from people on some of your predictions that you had?
No, not yet. No.
Oh man, I've gotten some questions on some of the things that I said that are triggering. This morning I went there and I kind of penned a few bullet points on some blog posts that I want to put together to kind of elaborate on some of the stuff.
Nice.
I got a lot of questions about my rant on the Office Store.
Oh, good.
I've seen some stuff, or the Office 365 Store, and I've seen some stuff on Facebook from another ISV that was having some challenges. And yeah, I don't know if we should do an episode on it where we kind of go off on a rant, or if we want to keep the rant away and instead I'll just keep it on my blog.
Yeah, we should do it at some stage. We should talk about that because I got a lot of deep-rooted opinions about that.
Yeah, we should just chat. We definitely have a chat about it. Yeah. But
hey, I've got some more news, kind of more dev-related. Microsoft open-sourced its Chakra JavaScript engine a couple of weeks ago, and they just did a PR into the Node.js project for people to be able to run Node but using the Chakra JavaScript engine. And didn't we talk about, like, maybe we mentioned it on the show, like, wouldn't it be crazy if you could? And then I was like, yeah, but surely there's a whole bunch of incompatibility problems you'd come across and all that. So it turns out they've been working on this what looks like some time already. And they've actually got a pretty cool solution to it. So they've written a sort of a shim between Chakra and Node so that Chakra sort of imitates the V8 JavaScript engine, which Node runs on by default. And so that you can run a Node project or Node code, which would normally run against V8, the JavaScript engine in V8, but you could switch it to use Chakra, and it kind of abstracts away those differences and with this shim. And so we've linked off to it in the Flipboard, but you could see some interesting things around performance. Looks pretty good with the engine. And all I can think is, who's the poor bugger who's got to code review that PR, right? Like, yeah. That is kind of a big tweak. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes on GitHub. You can check out the PR on GitHub and the conversation that's going on around it. And people are like, what? It's huge.
It's what they've done is huge, not like the amount of work that they're saying that you have to go through to get this working is huge. It's interesting. The way I understood it was, is that this shim that sits between Node and Chakra is essentially emulating the V8 API, so that Node is written to against the V8 external API. And so what the Chakra guys did is they built this shim that would be able to slip right in between those two. And then you tell Node to use the shim instead of using the V8 API, so that there's no real changes to Node other than just changing a pointer. What's going to be interesting about this to me, well, first of all, if you go back, go look at the PR, we've got it linked in Flipboard. One of the things that's really interesting about it is to see how much more performant Chakra is than V8. And they show, like, building different projects, building the TypeScript compiler, building Visual Studio Code, some interesting stuff in there. I think I actually also, in related news, I put something in our Flipboard from Andrew Liu, who we had on the podcast a couple weeks or months ago, about how they use Chakra as the engine for DocumentDB. Hmm. But the thing that I found that is what's interesting about, and some improvements they've made there, it's a cool article. But what I find, what's going to be interesting to see how this goes, is that, you know, you see these projects kind of pop up and then someone loses interest in maintaining them.
Yeah.
I know that there's a core team at Microsoft that's managing Chakra and that's doing this, but I wonder how dedicated they're going to be to this project, because my understanding is that the V8 guys, they really only have one customer that they pay attention to, and that's the Chrome,
Yeah.
Right? Or the Chromium project, which is the foundation for Chrome. And so my understanding is, and listening to a bunch of Node podcasts that I listen to from core contributors to the Node project, it sounds like a lot of, like, that the V8 guys don't care so much about changing their API, and they do a lot of breaking changes. And so the Node spends a lot of cat and mouse type time and updating their API that calls V8 to work around the different API changes they make. And so watching that, now you've got not just Node doing that, but you also have the Chakra team is now doing that with their shim, so that Node can call that.
Yeah.
That's going to be interesting to see how that goes. I mean, I'm not at all being pessimistic about it. I think it's cool that this was done. I mean, what's the use case for doing it? For going through and switching and saying, I want to use Chakra over V8. I don't know. I mean, the fact that we now have two really, that I haven't looked at the details on it. When you compare Chakra to V8, hopefully that they're pretty equivalent, at least in terms of, you know, what are the, like, the ES6 things that they support and the performance and all that kind of stuff. I'm really curious to see how this stuff kind of progresses, because hopefully we've got two very viable engines and they'll force a little bit more competition and we'll see cooler things coming down the pipe.
Yeah, I think there's definitely perf differences right now. Like, if you look at the blog post, they do a comparison of V8 versus Chakra in Node today and how they've been progressing over time as the Chakra engine is gotten a bit more mature. And there's definitely perf differences now for different workloads and things you do with them. So maybe it'll boil down to, you know, I'm building a Node project to, you know, focus on one particular type of computation and you'll pick an engine based on which one's the best at doing that or something like that.
Mm, yeah.
you know, like this is a high transaction system, so I might go with V8 versus this is high computation and this particular style of computation, and so I've got to choose Chakra or something like that, right?
Yeah.
You might pick an engine based on what your sort of center of gravity is.
Yeah, it's interesting. Definitely interesting to see what people do with this.
Yeah, definitely. It'll be pretty cool.
You got another one here that you want to share with us?
Yeah. Not particularly Office 365 related, but I thought was pretty sweet. Trello introducing these new things called power-ups, which are basically add-ins for Trello. If you're familiar with the add-in model in Office and SharePoint, kind of the same in concept. You can add new functionality to Trello, different integrations to other systems. You can integrate parts in the UI to give buttons and menus and cards and all that sort of stuff, as well as, you know, iframing in part of your application in certain scenarios. So it'll be interesting that they've got a really nice suite or store, I guess, of these power-ups already for Trello business class customers. Things like Slack and GitHub and Google Drive and a whole bunch of others, stuff like that. So yeah, really interesting addition to Trello, and that'll really open it up for a whole bunch of interesting other use cases that that people have either had to build custom integrations with today or have been missing. So yeah, stuff like SurveyMonkey, Zendesk, they've got JoinMe, Harvest, Slack, GitHub, Google Drive, Evernote, Dropbox, Package Tracker, Salesforce, Twitter, the whole list goes on. So
yeah,
it's pretty cool. Definitely check it out. It's called Trello Power-Ups.
Very cool. I saw we had a bunch of other additional things that the Azure guys had that have published recently. So I can run through a couple of these that they've added. We've got self-service subscription transfer. Self-service subscription transfer is now globally available. So this was announced, I think, about sometime in right around January the 14th. And what this is that if you created a subscription in Azure, if you wanted to transfer that subscription from yourself to someone else being the owner of that subscription, in the past, that always required you to open up a ticket and to get someone to go about doing that for you. I know I'd been through this where I had a bunch of subscriptions that were scattered between different accounts, and I wanted to consolidate everything under one account, and I had to open up a ticket to get that done. So now you can actually do all of that straight through the Azure management portal. This is going to include a bunch of different subscription types. So it's pay-as-you-go, the MSDN dev and test pay-as-you-go subscription, Visual Studio professional or test professional subscriptions, MSDN subscriptions, Visual Studio Enterprise with MSDN, Visual Studio Enterprise BizSpark, and the Action Pack. All of those, you can transfer those subscriptions from one to the other. And frankly, I don't know of many other subscriptions that you can that are out there that fall outside of this group, but I'm sure that there are additional packaging things that people have done, like with partners and stuff like that.
Yeah, I had to go through moving a bunch of stuff around late last year, and it was kind of painful. Like, this will really help with simplifying it. There was a lot that you could do by yourself, but then there were a whole bunch of edge cases of things that you couldn't move, and that meant you had to open a ticket and do all that stuff. So this will be nice. I've got a VM I need to move today, so great timing.
Yeah, that's one. Another one that they had here was that they also have general availability of Azure role-based access control, so RBAC. You can now have custom roles, and so not just using the roles that Microsoft provides, but you can create custom roles and then grant those roles specific permissions. There's a way that this is all something that's just part of Azure. It's just one of the value adds you get, or one of the features that you get as an Azure subscriber. So it's not anything extra, any extra cost or anything. And you can manage your RBAC, your role-based access control roles that you set up. You can manage all this using some command line tools, using the PowerShell stuff, or using the Azure portal to manage these different things.
Nice. I've got some graph news.
Ooh.
You know how we've been moaning about lack of insight and transparency about what's going on in the developer world for Office 365? Well,
like a changelog?
Yeah, exactly. So the graph folks are putting out a changelog. Congratulations.
Very nice.
As the .NET Rocks guys say, golf clap for you, sir, because this is huge. Let's see if it works, but this is huge. It's a good first step. I'm optimistic.
Yeah.
And so they actually split it between the beta endpoint and the V1 endpoint, sort of tell you what's changing at each step. There's a few things I'd like to see them do with this. One is make it RSS capable so that I can plug it into Ift and have it notify me when when a change in the change log happens, and people could subscribe to it in whatever tool they like being notified, because at the moment I have to go check it, which is kind of would be useful to not have to do. And then the other thing is I'd like them to stick it in GitHub so that you can go do a diff on the changelog and see what is changing in the changelog over time more easily. And that'd be nice.
Yeah, they've got the changelog in the or they have the site, the content site is already up in GitHub. So it'd be nice if this was one of the I guess this is a page that's on the site maybe. Or at least one page where you can go back and you can see like what the history is.
Yeah, it'd be nice to be able to get notifications from GitHub or subscribe to the RSS or something like that. But this is a big move. Like it, I know this is going to sound silly, but at Microsoft, with the number of people involved and the number of teams involved, doing something like this is very complicated. And so I applaud their efforts. And it might not seem like a big deal to a lot of people, like, of course you've got to do a change log. But having worked there, I know how hard this is to pull off. And I'm very, very pleased that they've gotten onto it. Because, with that many people involved, that many teams and things, it's surprisingly tough to do. So, and the graph in particular, there is a lot of teams involved in pulling that together across Azure and Office and so forth. So huge move, and I'm very happy to see it, and I hope they do a good job of it.
Very cool. Yeah, it's funny. I was looking at this, and this is actually something that in my spare time is something I'm looking at with the open source project that I'm running, the NG Office UI Fabric. We do a change log as well whenever we ship an update, but that's a manual process. Every time that we see PRs come in and I merge them in, I always go through and add a little entry in the change log and leave it in dev. And then when we actually go from dev to master and we ship out a new release, I change the time and the date that we actually did the release and the link to the actual tag. But there's a format that I've seen that the Angular Material guys do. And my spare time, I'm kind of reading up on this to see how big of a deal it would be to set this up. And it's what they use is a certain syntax or convention, I should say, with their commit messages. And so whenever they do like a new feature or a fix or they have a documentation update or any of those kinds of things, they write the commit messages in a specific way. And it's not really all that complicated. They just start, it's the first word is like add or feature or fix or something like that. And then in parentheses, it's the feature that's actually getting updated. And then it's a single line commit. And that whole first line's got to be like less than 50 characters. And then you can put in a new line and you put a bunch of stuff after that. What's neat about it is that then there's this tool, there's this node module that you can run that looks at the Git log and generates the change log for you on the fly. It can even go through inversion and stuff for you. So I looked at it a little bit and I was like, wonder how that seems like it's really complicated. It's actually really, really simple. I thought it'd be a lot harder, but it actually isn't. The hardest part is trying to make sure that everyone uses the same commit message. So today, it's not going to be hard for us because today with this project, whenever someone submits a PR, I take the PR, I kind of pull it in and make sure everything works. And then once it does, I squash all their commits into one that just says like add blank directive or fix directive this and put links to the issue that they actually fixed it in. So it'd be easy for me to implement going back and changing all the commit messages. That's not too bad, but I think it's like there's a way that if they don't meet the convention, then it just ignores them. So all superfluous ones. So
I see.
It's interesting. It's a cool little technique.
Yeah, that's nice. That's nice. Good for people if you're wanting to integrate all those comments into your commit history and then auto generate your change log, huh?
Yep. Yeah.
Nice.
So it's cool stuff. These tools are cool. So at any rate. All right, man. Another good show.
Yeah. Thanks very much, AC.
Ended nice and abruptly this week.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. Enjoy.
If anybody is interested in, I will just touch base one more time. We are looking for talking to people about sponsoring or advertising on the show. We do have one company that hopefully we'll be able to have on the show pretty soon. But if you're interested, reach out to us and just put something in the comment messages on the comment form on the site. MicrosoftCloudShow.com.
Absolutely.
Woohoo! Cool.
All right. Thanks, AC.
Yeah, man. Good talking to you again.
Catch ya.
If you have a question for us, go to MicrosoftCloudShow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text. We'll record it as a WAV or an MP3 file and provide a link so that we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is an excerpt from Evaporated Eric by Monk Turner, used under Creative Commons. You can subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for the Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at MicrosoftCloudShow.com. where you'll also find a full transcript and show notes of each episode. You can find us on Facebook searching for the Microsoft Cloud Show or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.